to the L. Barrio, you know we got flow. East Harlem, home of the boat, the show. Listen, podcast dishing, easy going. On the show where the hot air's always blowing. Downloading, never miss an episode. Keep it real, always serve it Alamo. New York, New York, if you can make it here, you know the rest, you can make it anywhere.
This is episode 92 of the Brad Bogner Show. We're going to have our guest author, Tanner Colby, of Belushi, a biography on shortly. Just before that, I wanted to get a little background on John Belushi, an incredibly larger-than-life comedic figure. You know, we're huge fans of comedy on the Brad Bogner Show, so it was a slam dunk to get people on that have written about him and dealt with all the people associated with his life. And this is a really interesting book. I was able to co-author with John Belushi's first wife, actually, and it was really interesting and fun to see all these people speak so positively about him, and very uplifting book for somebody that unfortunately had such a tragic ending to his life, especially a life that early on in his career seemed like he was not only destined for stardom, but just couldn't fail. Larger-than-life figure where no matter what he did, he always came out on top, and we cover some of that, the highs and the lows, and it's just really, really interesting to talk with people that were there firsthand, as well as reminisce about some of our, you know, favorite stuff that we've experienced with John Belushi, a guy that's done, you know, Saturday Night Live, Animal House, Blues Brothers, many fun movies. A lot of them are available on Netflix Watch Now. Been talking with people and complaining that we haven't had a Netflix Watch Now in a while, so you can definitely check out The Best of John Belushi on Saturday Night Live to get in the mood for this episode. There's pretty much every Saturday Night Live episode ever, too, so you can see, you know, all the samurai sketches he did, the Joe Cocker impersonations, even the Little Chocolate Donuts athlete sketch, which almost seemed ahead of its time, very revolutionary in terms of how ridiculously over-the-top these sports commercials are. So without further ado, let's jump right in and let's get the interview with Tanner Colby up. So our guest today is author Tanner Colby, who's done several books. Today we're here to talk about his work on Belushi, a biography. Tanner, thanks for being on the show. Great to have you.
No problem. Great to be here.
I am really nervous about mixing up Jim and John Belushi. I get the fucking Baldwin brothers right every time, but I'm hoping we can keep it to a minimum here with my screw up. So I apologize in advance. No disrespect.
No problem.
You know, obviously Belushi is a comic legend. A lot of people have a familiarity with him. I really like the book. I really like how it delves early on. This is a guy who grew up in a, you know, working class Albanian family, and really, from an early age, this guy really felt like he had to be the man of the house, and kind of from a dysfunctional family, and it was really interesting to see all that pressure that had mounted on him, even at a young age, kind of trying to raise a family almost and keep it all afloat.
Yeah, definitely. He really did. He was the first of the Albanian immigrant, first generation to come across the boat, and he really felt that pressure. And when he told his parents that he wanted to go into comedy and not run the family restaurant, it really didn't go well.
And there was his grandma that kind of, like, I guess, kept them afloat, sort of, because there was, I think it was his brother Jim that actually said, like, if it weren't for her, we'd all be dead or in prison, probably, just from absolute anarchy in the house.
Yeah, no, the family was totally dysfunctional, and without the grandmother, it would not have run well at all. And that was really kind of why John was always sort of out the door and looking for, you know, surrogate families, whether it was Second City or Saturday Night Live or, unfortunately, the people he fell in with at the end of his life when he found his drug habit.
He had that classic comedy archetype almost, always funny, funniest guy in the class, class clown, everybody loved him, made everybody around him funnier. Just once, you'd kind of like to see one of these comedy legends just be some spontaneous 47-year-old that found his comic genius out of nowhere. But that wasn't the case for Belushi at all. It seemed like he was always destined for greatness.
No, he was. He was, from the minute he stepped on stage, he was just magnetic. And everyone loved him.
And, you know, we kind of start seeing that once he's introduced to improv comedy, he ends up at Second City and it just explodes, you know, it makes everybody around him funnier. He was always, he didn't write things down a lot, but he always seemed to see the big picture and kind of always being able to find the funniest part of a routine, no matter what it was about.
Yeah, no, he definitely had a talent for that.
And I guess what was interesting was at one point, I mean, Harold Ramis had to take him aside and kind of be like, look, dude, like, we get it. You're funny, but you're kind of taken away from other people's moments. And he's like, I totally get it. I can't not be funny. I got to be doing something.
Yeah, no, he didn't have an off switch, and he had to sort of learn how to control his talents in order to be able to be on Saturday Night Live.
And I guess what was interesting that a lot of people, including myself, might not know about is that he was actually kind of a hippie at this point. You know, he had these strong stances of that time, and he was actually involved in a lot of different protests and part of that whole counterculture movement.
He was. He took part in the 68 demonstrations when the Democratic National Convention took place in Chicago, and he took tear gas, you know, canisters and you know, fire hoses. And really sort of brought that spirit of the 60s into Second City and on stage, where he played Abbie Hoffman and took what was a very staid 1950s style of comedy and really turned it into an anarchic 1960s revolutionary style of comedy.
And it seems like with such an alpha male of the Belushi type, you know, he kind of butted heads at times with these other great comedy legends of the time. You know, Christopher Guest and him kind of disagreed on certain things. Chevy Chase and him disagreed at SNL. Did you feel like that at all brought out kind of the best in all these people, or were there sort of more to those rivalries that are sort of hard to talk about with the passing of Belushi? What do you think of that?
I think it made everything stronger. They all competed with each other and played off of each other and learned from each other. And no, I think it definitely, those relationships and those rivalries made what we think of as modern comedy today.
Absolutely, because, I mean, he just had such a great way with people. And, I mean, guys like Michael O'Donoghue that he was working with at Lampoon and Saturday Night Live, those aren't exactly guys that just warm up to anybody. And yet he just had this powerful way to get them to do almost anything they wanted. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, no, he definitely had a talent for that. And, you know, he was sort of the galvanizing force that brought everyone in Saturday Night Live together and, you know, turned them into a team.
And, I mean, one of those anecdotes that was really funny was, I think at one point, he just wanted to see more of Carrie Fisher, so he somehow convinced her to go out with Dan Aykroyd, his one of his best friends, and they pretty much got engaged right away, all because, you know, it's just kind of something that John Belushi wanted.
Yeah, no, he had sort of a magnetic force over people. He could get them to do whatever he wanted to do, and he was irresistible in that way.
I guess we kind of see the highs and the lows, and highs definitely part where, you know, he's the number one guy on Saturday Night Live. It's an incredibly funny show. He goes to Animal House as well, which is also at the top, and that's kind of the peak of his success, is just this idea that working himself to death almost on this movie and TV show, and yet, you know, there's a strong camaraderie about Animal House that I thought was interesting that Landis, the director, helped put together.
What's that?
I just thought it was very interesting how there's almost that fraternity-like atmosphere on the set of Animal House, and how, you know, John Belushi, not all on the screen a ton for Animal House, but he really did kind of dominate the perception that that was his movie, I guess.
No, he did. It was a minor part. It was a supporting part. It really didn't have a whole lot of lines. But, you know, Landis recognized the power that John had and really sort of fostered that fraternity atmosphere among the team players, and that what you see on the screen is what it was really like on set.
We just, you know, it just keeps going, getting better and better. Saturday Night Live, Animal House, Blues Brothers is the next thing. I thought that was interesting because there were a lot of blues legends at the times that we think of as these huge musicians that were kind of dead in that period of the 70s, and that Blues Brothers act kind of revitalized them and brought them back to the forefront of that music.
No, they did. Absolutely. That music was struggling as a genre, and that shot new life into it.
And I thought what was really interesting was that everybody was just still kind of figuring out, is this a joke? Is this a real musical act? It kind of reminded me like when I saw Mike Tyson's opening night at on Broadway, where you just sort of like anything could happen. And I guess it kind of had that atmosphere. And I like there was, I think it was Joe Cocker that just said like, oh shit, they're really doing this musical act. And it ended up being this huge musical thing. It wasn't just, you know, this Saturday Night Live sketch.
Well, what got them the credibility is the band. They went out and found the real musicians who were, you know, the real guys who were part of the that scene and really made it, you know, their own.
And that was, like, they took a pretty serious chunk of their personal investment. They spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on this gamble. So, I mean, they definitely had a lot to lose, and it was really exciting to see that whole thing work out, whether it be the live shows and the recording of the albums.
Yeah, no, they John invested a lot of his own money, and it paid off for him. So, yeah, went really well.
And we appreciate Tanner coming on the show to talk about Belushi, a biography, and that right there, that period where he was on the top, it's pretty impressive. I mean, he had Animal House and Blues Brothers come out, two of the biggest comedy movies of all time. Blues Brothers, he goes on tour with Dan Aykroyd, completely sets the world on fire, revitalizes this dying genre. And it's just incredible to believe that within only a few years of that period, he would be no longer with us. And, you know, he had done some movies, Continental Divide, didn't go over so well. That was his, you know, serious attempt at acting, not just being, you know, the Bluto character for Animal House. And he really got his life back on the right track. He hired a personal consultant named Smokey to actually help him kick his drug addiction and, you know, kind of phase himself out from hanging out with that wrong crowd. And unfortunately, no matter how hard you try, it's ultimately up to the person. And, you know, he just had that constant desire to please. There's some funny stories in that book, though, even at, you know, some dark moments, especially on the set of Neighbors with Dan Aykroyd. There's a joke, Jim Downey, legendary and longtime SNL writer, said they hated John Avildsen, the Academy Award-winning director from Karate Kid and Rocky, actually. I was right the first time. They hated him so much on the set of Neighbors that Belushi had looked up how much it would cost to hire an assassin to kill him. And he said, it's only $5,000. It's crazy. I mean, we're not going to do it, but I mean, that's pretty awesome. And so it just shows that there was always calm in his mind, no matter how dark or how depressing life seemed to get. There was always a way for Belushi to make jokes, and he's definitely going to be missed. And it's just impressive to see how he could make anybody do what he wanted to ultimately. You know, we always have those groups of friends that are, you know, resistant to peer pressure. They won't let themselves get bullied. You try and get them to go out and party, try and go out late, do something fun, you know, and they just don't want to do it. And they're sticking to their guns. But Belushi, man, there's so many stories in this book from all the people that have worked with him firsthand, dealt with him firsthand, were best friends with him. So, yeah, you just walk right into my apartment at 4 o'clock in the morning, start blasting blues records at the top of, you know, the stereo deck, or, you know, people going to the Blues Brothers bar until the wee hours of the night. You know, there's stories of Lorne Michaels watching him do cannonballs in a pool after going out partying all night. The guy partied with Jack Nicholson. I mean, I remember somebody joking that one day we're going to take out John Belushi's heart and it's just going to be, you know, three times the size of a normal heart like Secretariat. And that could very well be true. I think this is definitely a book you want to check out for comedy fans, people that love that era of comedy. I mean, it's hard to argue against his importance and relevance to that scene. Saturday Night Live, Second City, you know, you got plenty of guys in Second City, whether it be Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, guys just went on to still to this day have a big influence in the scene. You know, it covers a lot of the highs and the lows. Overall, it's a very positive book, though. I mean, there's some funny stuff where there's some kind of self-loathing. You know, he's got a Napoleon complex, which is interesting because he's also obsessed with the the French military genius, Napoleon. So throughout time, he was a guy that was, as we, you know, I keep throwing out that phrase, larger than life. It's really going to be tough to replace somebody like that. Chris Farley made that attempt, and Tanner actually wrote a book about that too. Maybe we'll get him back on one day. But for the time being, you know, thanks again to Tanner Colby for checking out the book, coming on the podcast, and you know, we'll once again recommend Netflix Watch Now Pick of the Week. That's going to be Best of John Belushi. All of his, you know, SNL skits. There's so many good ones. All the samurai sketches are going to be there. You know, the Joe Cocker impersonations. The bees. He hated doing it, but he did a pretty successful job. So I think people should definitely check that out. Whether you're a John Belushi fan or you actually have never heard of him, I think you'll really get something out of it. And, you know, thanks again for tuning in. And we'll talk to you guys soon. Tune in.